Okay, what's up, everybody? This is Mike and Robert from Media 1099, and we have just wrapped up another interview for 2020, this time with wedding photojournalist out of Las Vegas, Amber Garrett. This was a fantastic interview, Robert. I don't know how you felt about it, but this was really insightful. I was so glad to have her on because she has such a good idea of what it takes to cultivate relationships with her clients and market to those clients. I thought it was very, very impressive.
Yeah, no, I was kind of blown away. I'm definitely going to take down and steal some of these tips and tricks. You know, I think her strategy from moving from like a journalism school out to Vegas and like starting in a new market for herself was really impressive. You know, like she got the ball rolling. She didn't just sit there and think jobs were going to come to her. Like she went out and got them. And I think we learned a lot from just talking with her about that.
The other area that I think was really impressive, and you'll listen to the interview, is that, you know, as she learned that being a freelancer, running your own business requires you to wear a lot of different hats, what she couldn't do, she kind of outsourced and delegated. I thought that was really interesting too. And she just developed everything else that she was, you know, sort of weak at, and now has a business that I think is really sustainable, diversified, and just very impressive. If you go to her website, that was the most impressive thing to me about kind of doing research for her. I was like, I knew I wanted her on the show, but when I went to her website, I was like, oh, this is actually way better than I ever thought. It's really an example of how we as creatives can be better at marketing, better at copyright, better at all the things that, you know, really sell our clients on us in a saturated market.
Yeah. And she really took the bull by the horns of like realizing like, okay, I need to learn beyond what my like traditional education was. So she's taking classes online, watching YouTube videos, you know, like, okay, I need to work on my SEO, or like, how do I work on my sales approach? You know, and I loved when I asked her like, oh, so, you know, was this transition organic or did you have to learn it? And she's just like, oh no, this was not organic. Like
right.
This was trial and error and me educating myself. And I think a lot of times, you know, we tend to think like, oh, okay, this is where I'm at. Like my work speaks for myself and people will find me, where she is just like, nope, I'm going to go out there and hunt and make sure my bills get paid.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I thought it was just such a great, insightful interview. I'm very excited to, launch this. She also offers a program where photographers can get mentorship from her as well. And I highly suggest people looking into that. We will link that in the show notes. For now, we got a quick sponsor ad coming up. And then shortly after, we will continue our interview with Amber Garrett. All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Media 1099 podcast. My name is Michael Durr, here with my co-host, Robert Husky, here to provide you with some inspiration in your creative freelancing journey. To help us out with that today, we are joined by Las Vegas photojournalist Amber Garrett to discuss how she built her wedding photography business from the ground up. You can view her work at ambergarrettphoto.com. I met her a few years ago. It was an absolute pleasure. I really admired her work ethic and her eye, and I really just hope our podcast doesn't destroy her credibility too much overall. So we really appreciate her being here. Amber, thank you so much. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Amber.
So, you know, obviously this coronavirus has kind of impacted, you know, the wedding industry over the last several months, I would say. How has that roadblock kind of adjusted your personal and professional life so far?
So COVID-19 really hit the wedding industry hard because the wedding industry is an event-based industry. You know, we can't really work without these events happening. So having, you know, pretty much 3 to 4 months of work just completely cleared off, either postponed or completely canceled, really, really hurt the whole industry. You know, of course, we feel bad for brides and grooms who are having to go through postponing their original date. You know, they don't get the magical wedding that they wanted. Now they have to be concerned about all these other limitations. But a lot of us really struggled to pay rent for a while. Thankfully, I was not one of those people. I have diversified my income quite a bit, so I wasn't struggling too hard, but it definitely changed the trajectory for certain financial goals that we had.
Yeah, I definitely feel the pain with you on that. I had a couple of weddings cancel or be postponed, and even other events where they're just like, okay, at the start of this, it was one of those like, okay, we'll be good to go by July, August. Mm-hmm. And then now it's just, I think everyone's just like, oh, well, we're canceling indefinitely, but we'll let you know. And yeah, it kind of does put like a big strain on you financially if you're not, you know, prepared and have a little bit of a backup plan going.
Yeah, it becomes a huge question mark, which I think is very difficult for the wedding industry because a lot of wedding vendors book a year out in advance, you know? Yeah. So when they had all this money coming in to pay their bills to be able to live and then it just disappears, it becomes a giant question mark.
Yeah, especially with that year out, because it's true, like it's like everything's 6 to a year. And now I think everyone's just kind of paused the brakes and like, okay, maybe we'll do a small elopement or something, but we're going to pause on that big wedding production.
Yeah, I've seen that very commonly. So living in Las Vegas, you know, it's kind of the wedding capital of the world. You know, everyone comes here to get married. So it's been really, really interesting to be able to meet a whole bunch of new couples that I didn't think I was ever going to meet. So I've had a lot of couples who they've had to postpone their big celebration, but they still want to just be married either for, you know, financial reasons, insurance reasons, or, you know, just because they planned on being married this year. And so they'll actually come out to Vegas to elope, to get that whole process taken care of. And then they get a little mini vacation with it too, by being in Vegas. It has been interesting because of the, you know, travel concerns. But it's also been a really great way to just get a whole bunch of new people into my portfolio, into my network, and be able to give them something that they didn't think that they could have until next year.
Yeah. Did you notice that there was a lot of elopements kind of starting to trend up when this started to happen the last few months, or what was that kind of observation like? What did you notice there?
Yeah. I had more couples elope in June and July than I've ever had before. You know, normally, because there are so many Las Vegas photographers and it is such a saturated market, you might get, you know, one elopement a week. But I started getting inquiries for like 3 to 4 elopements per week. So it definitely kept me busy. And I definitely got to continue making work, which was also a concern because if you're not making any new work, how are you going to attract, you know, those 2021 and 2022 couples who haven't started planning yet? So that was very, very interesting to have my calendar just suddenly kind of explode with a bunch of elopements.
So with that, what's a little bit of the approach difference between a wedding and an elopement? Because, you know, like a wedding could be really, really big or really, really small, and elopements, especially now, are very few people and just seem to be more spur of the moment, even though they've been engaged for a while.
Yeah. So I consider elopements like 10 or fewer people or so. So a lot of times it's just me and the couple and the officiant. And then other times they'll bring, you know, a small entourage of close family or close friends. Whereas the weddings, you know, there's a little bit more tradition involved. You know, there's a little bit more anticipation or excitement as, you know, the couple is getting ready, you know, whether it's the bride or the groom or both, or there's just a little bit more pressure, I think, when it comes to weddings, because of the tradition that has come along with it. Elopements are very non-traditional, historically speaking. So it's a little bit more relaxed. You can kind of focus more on the couple rather than all of the aspects of the day.
Kind of speaking of non-traditional, you know, you obviously mentioned that you live in Las Vegas, which is kind of a unique backdrop, I would say, for non-traditional themed weddings, you know, from, and I've seen on your website, from Elvis themed chapels to anything on the Las Vegas Strip. Can you think of a location or a theme that really stands out as being a unique Las Vegas type of memory for you?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I think the first time I ever photographed in one of these little chapels was probably one of the standout experiences for me. So I moved a lot between 2018 and 2019. My fiance and I changed markets twice within an 8-month span. So for the first year that I was living in Vegas, I was still traveling a lot to go back to the Midwest to photograph weddings. A lot of my work took me out of state. through marketing efforts and everything like that, it took me about a year to start gaining Las Vegas-based clients.
Wow.
Which I feel like is normal when it comes to the wedding industry. There are ways to speed it up, of course, but I didn't know those ways when I moved to Vegas. So the first time I ever photographed in one of those little chapels, it was in December 2019, and it was actually a very good friend of mine who was getting married. And she and her fiance just wanted it to be as low-key as possible and very much focused on them and not all of the hullabaloo when it comes to traditional weddings. So I remember we went to the Little White Wedding Chapel. They have a little pink Cadillac in their drive-thru. You can actually sit in your own car and drive through to get the ceremony. It was a really interesting experience. But we forgot to go to the marriage license bureau beforehand. So we arrived to the chapel. We didn't have the right paperwork. We had to go over to the marriage license bureau to get all of the official forms and everything, because otherwise they can't be married. In a lot of states, that is a 3-day waiting period that also requires a blood test. In Vegas, none of that is required, and you can walk out with your paperwork. So it's quite different. And then being able to go right back to the chapel and get them married right on the spot was just fascinating. Because growing up in an industry where, you know, it's a year-long process or more, whereas my friend and I planned her elopement in a week. So.
Yeah, no, that definitely seems kind of very Vegas-esque of a story that you had going on. So you mentioned that you did a lot of traveling between 2018 and 2019. Mm-hmm. Is there any specific reason for that?
So I did my studies in Missouri. I went to the University of Missouri for both my bachelor's and master's in photojournalism. And that's where I met my fiance, and he got his first job in Wisconsin. So June 2018, after he completed his master's, we moved up to Wisconsin for him to begin his job. We lasted about 8 months before the winter was just too much for us to handle. It was consistently, you know, 0 degrees with a foot of snow. And I'm originally from California and he's originally from Louisiana. So we just weren't built for that. So he found a new job out in Vegas, and that's what took us out to Las Vegas in January 2019.
So going back a little bit, Amber, what drove you to build a wedding creative brand?
Okay, this is a long story. So when I was a sophomore in college at the University of Missouri, I was in a fundamentals of photojournalism class. And for our final project, we basically just had to do a profile on someone. So I had contacted a local wedding photographer to see if she would be interested in being my subject for this project. She was. I completed my project. Everything was fine. After I finished, she offered me a job assisting at her photo shoots. So I started doing that. And within 2 years, I had quickly kind of run up the ranks, and I was managing her business for her almost full time. It was 2016 at this point. I was about to graduate college and then start grad school. And, you know, we worked together probably close to 30 hours a week on top of my schooling, just between photographing weddings, between editing photos, creating new brands under her business. By March 2017, I was about 9 months away from finishing my master's. And John, my fiance, and I had plans to move out of the state of Missouri after he graduated so that we could go find jobs. Because at that time, I was very much set on having a traditional photojournalism job. My dream job was being a photo editor at a publication, so either a magazine or a newspaper, mm-hmm. but I got my master's in visual editing, so I wanted to pursue that. So I went to meet with my boss at that time, and I explained the situation. I was like, you know, it's going to be about 15 months from now. So I gave her about a year and 3 months notice that I would be moving out of state. I wanted to talk to her about, you know, expanding her brand, expanding her reach so that, you know, her small town Missouri business could go national. And that's what I wanted to do and what I wanted to pursue. And then she could be, you know, have a dual market photography with Missouri and wherever I ended up, which was probably going to be coastal. So I pitched this idea to her, and 2 days later, she fired me. So all of the weddings that I had booked on my calendar to photograph with her were gone. I lost about 75% of my income and really wasn't sure what I was going to do or how I was going to afford to live to continue going to grad school and finishing my master's and everything. So I kind of had to pull myself up by my bootstraps. You know, I got as many part-time jobs, as many side jobs as I could, and really just focused on building my own wedding industry or my own wedding business rather than supporting someone else's. So within a year after that, by December 2018, I was pretty successfully booking weddings about 10 a year or so, and then also second shooting for other photographers, but never on a consistent basis with one photographer, because by that point I had learned my lesson. By December 2018, I was actually being flown out to Nicaragua to photograph weddings. So it very quickly grew, and it was one of those things where it was kind of sink or swim. And with the journalism industry going through such a rough patch, I had to, you know, I kind of had to transition into weddings, but it wasn't a bad decision, I guess.
Well, I guess there's a silver lining to everything for doing the right thing too. I mean, I would have promoted you, you know, but I'm sorry to hear that, but I guess in a way it worked out, you know, in the long run.
Yeah, it definitely worked out. And I mean, I don't think our personalities meshed right from the beginning. And it was just one of those where it was a misunderstanding and it was a different in mindset between her and myself. Right. But it worked out for the better.
I kind of want to pick your brain on that transition, you know, because it did seem like you were doing the right thing of like, hey, look, I'm giving you a year and some months to kind of, maybe we can make this work, to you running your own business. What was kind of like a couple of the differences in mindset or goals or things that you didn't notice when you're working for somebody else that now that you're the captain of your own ship, you have to pay attention to?
So being a small business owner, you really wear every single hat. You know, I don't have someone who does my marketing for me. I do all my marketing. I don't have someone who does all my sales for me. I do all my sales. So, and then there's even like the day-to-day operations between actually photographing the weddings and actually editing the photos. So it's been a really interesting shift, I guess, from helping run someone else's business to running my own fully. I didn't realize that there were so many hats that needed to be worn, but I don't regret a single second of it.
Go ahead.
No. I was just kind of rambling at that point. So go ahead.
Of those skill sets that you had to learn, you had to develop, you know, different skill sets for your business. What did you grasp really quickly, and what kind of skill set was rather tumultuous to learn?
So I think the skill set that I grasped really quickly was probably the operations side, you know, learning how to not just be someone else's second photographer on a wedding day, but how to be the one in control, and how to be the main person in charge, the HBIC, as I love to call it. That was a very quick shift, because it had to be. You know, I didn't have anyone else I could rely on to either lead the way or support me. It truly just became me all by myself. That was probably the quickest skill set that I had to learn. The slowest one that I am still learning every single day is sales and confidence in sales. That's not something that I ever really had to do. It's not something I ever really knew that I would have to do, because I had planned on working for someone else for the rest of my life. So transitioning into this authoritative CEO position where I have to be in charge of every single aspect and especially have to be the one who sells myself, that was a big shift because I didn't have any sales background, didn't have any like true marketing background in college, and there was only one class that semi-prepared me to be a freelancer, but it could have very easily been its own major at that point.
Yeah, I think it's always easier to sell somebody else than mm-hmm. yourself, right?
Exactly.
I wanted to kind of stick on kind of negotiations a little bit and kind of how you handle your clients. And what's that process like for you when you meet a client and they're looking for wiggle room in your rate or they're trying to get extra services? Walk me through what that process is kind of like.
So first and foremost, I approach my business with a humanistic mindset. I think at the core of it all, you know, I'm working with different clients than say like a freelance photojournalist would. So I'm working with like real couples who are trying to pay for their own wedding. So I understand the struggle because I'm also trying to pay for my own wedding right. at the same time.
Yeah. Congrats, by the way.
Thank you. It's been wild being on both sides of the...
It gives you a little bit more empathy, right? You know,
it truly does. Oh my gosh. But... You know, if I've had couples who have come to me and said, you know, we're getting married on a Monday and we only need you for 5 hours and this is our budget. While even though their budget might be lower than what I would normally charge, you know, they're getting married on a Monday. It's not likely that I'm going to book anything else that day. Mm-hmm. If it were a Saturday, you know, I only have so many Saturdays that I can make rent and feed my cats. So I can't offer wiggle room on Saturdays usually, but pretty much any other day of the week, I can do that. I've had couples that have said, you know, our wedding's on a Tuesday and it's in Colorado and we would need you to fly from Vegas to Colorado. And here's our budget. And within reason, I can work with it. You know, it's not like they're asking for 12 hours day of with a second photographer and a 12x12 wedding album, because that would very quickly increase the rates. You know, they just want XYZ. So if I can do my best to work with someone who very much wants to work with me, but the money just isn't there, then I'll do everything I can. Now, of course, if I get someone who says, we don't care about photos and we only have this much to pay, you know, it's harder for me to be a little bit more empathetic because they just want a photographer rather than me, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that's a really great way of looking and putting value on yourself, you know, because like you want to work with people that want great photography and want great images.
Exactly.
And looking at your work, it really shows, you know, like you have some great expressions, some great moments. It just feels like there's a lot of energy. And I think, you know, you as a photographer or as the person in charge have to draw that out, you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
And so I'm looking at your website right now and you have a contact or kind of inquire about your wedding photography. And I thought that it was very interesting how you kind of have some few questions of like, you know, the basic name, email, et cetera, like your dates. But I like how you have like, how did you hear about me? What kind of photos are you wanting? And even in the how much do you expect to spend on photography, you have a little bit of a price range of how much people normally spend and on weddings and elopements. Was there any kind of style choice or reasoning behind doing that? I think it's really innovative, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. My contact form is very, very intentional. I never want to beat around the bush when it comes to pricing. I never want people to feel surprised. I never want someone to look at my work and say, oh, she probably charges $500. And then they get my bill and it's, you know, however many times as expensive. Mm-hmm. I never want to blindside somebody. So my contact form, I very intentionally put like, these are my rates. And if you go through my website, you can see why. You know, I've been photographing weddings for a little over 7 years now. I have both my bachelor's and master's in photojournalism. And this is quite literally the only thing I know how to do with my life. So there's a reason. It's not like it was a... you know, it's not like I had a career or like I have a full-time job that affords me all of my expenses. And then this is just something I do on the side. This is my bread and butter. You know, this is how I feed my animals. So, and myself, but that's besides the point. so I, I just wanted to be very upfront with people. When it comes to the, you know, how did you hear about me? That's really more for me. So I know where to put my marketing efforts. So if I'm getting a whole bunch of inquiries that say that they found me on Instagram, okay, that means that what I'm doing on Instagram is working and I need to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Or the opposite, if I'm not getting enough that say that they found me on Instagram, then I need to put more effort into that. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, looking at your website, like we were talking a little bit earlier offline, it's a great design. And yeah, I think for me, I was like, oh, wow, this is really at least innovative, or it's put a spark in me of like, this is how you should do it, you know, for your wedding business. And then hearing why you do it of like, oh, I need to either double down on my Instagram because it's working, or, you know, I'm not getting stuff on Facebook. It's like those little things, like we were talking earlier about the CEO hats of like, mm-hmm. it's not just about day of, it's how did you find me? How do I market? You know, and this is great. I just love the website. So I'm sorry I'm raving about it, but I just
wanted to. I appreciate it. And I will shout out the people who helped me. I did not build my website all by myself. Chelsea from 23andNine Creative, she is based in Washington, D.C. She did my design top to bottom through rounds and rounds of edits. She created everything on there, every little element. And I owe a lot of my bookings to her. And then my sales coach, Carrie Brady, who is based in Los Angeles, she is a badass. Sorry if you can't swear on this, but there's no other way to really describe her. There's no better way to describe her. She really helped me with, you know, what my site should look like, what my copy should say, how I should sell myself better. And she's been instrumental in my bookings going up. So
to kind of jump back on what you just talked about with sales and how it kind of differentiates from marketing, can you explain to us that don't know, or photographers that are just jumping into this, what that difference is between marketing and what the sales aspect entails?
Yeah. So marketing is just getting in front of people's faces. So with the wedding industry, there's countless ways to do that. I think for the most part, I get a ton of my inquiries through word of mouth. I'm lucky that I've had some incredible clients over the past few years who sing my praises everywhere they go, and leave Facebook reviews so that other couples can find me. Google reviews help as well. Lately, I've been putting a lot of efforts into search engine optimization or SEO. You know, I hire out people to increase my SEO visibility, just things like that. But there's just a lot of different ways to get in front of people's faces, which is what marketing is. The sales are after they're inside your door. So I kind of think of it as a brick and mortar storefront. So after someone walks into my door, then what am I doing to make them feel like a valued customer? Like, I don't just want their money, but like, I want to work with them specifically and want to give them something that no one else can. So it's more of a personal connection when it comes to sales.
Right.
Whereas marketing's the broad, hey, look at me kind of thing.
Do you think that aspect, kind of leaning into that sales, is like, you know, obviously getting them in the door is huge, but then that is what helps you stand out? Because as you mentioned earlier, it's a very saturated market and you're in a competitive area in Las Vegas. Standing out just in terms of work is one thing, but then you as a professional, you as the person in your sales meetings, in your marketing pitches, is really kind of where that separates, I'd say.
Yes, absolutely. I've had clients who have contacted me and they'll just say, we just want to know what your price is. And I'll write them back. I'll say, you know, I really value connection with my couples. I want to make sure that you're taken care of. And I want to make sure that you feel like you're not alone in this process of planning a wedding. Because 9 times out of 10, my couples have never planned weddings before and they don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. Whereas here, hi, I've done this hundreds of times and yeah. I can help you. So I've had a lot of couples that say, you know, we just expected you to send us a PDF. We just expected to send you or to get some numbers from you. But I offer to hop on phone calls or Zoom calls nowadays to really understand what their weddings are going to look like. And so then I can make a recommendation on what I think they need to best tell their story so that that way, 50 years in the future, when they're looking back on their photos, they can relive it instantly. So for me, it's not just a one-day experience. It's, you know, generations from now.
So Kind of just leaning in on that kind of sales pitch, would you say that was an organic learning curve where you learned over time, like this is kind of how to make people feel comfortable, or did you take a strategic approach towards that?
Oh God, no, it was not organic. It was not something I figured out by myself. I mean, I think it's pretty evident by now that, you know, I spend a lot of money on education, whether that's formal through the university versus informal or online. So I have invested a lot into education after I graduated. And a lot of that education was less like how to be a photographer and more how to be a business owner mm-hmm. and how to be a salesperson. So that's, it's cost a lot of money, but it's been worth every penny. Because I think somewhere in life, somebody tells us that we have to be professional. And that idea of professionalism is wearing suits and never, you know, saying LOL in an email. Whereas like now, you know, to get people comfortable with me, I have on my contact form, like, tell me which show is your favorite between these options that I have listed. And it's like New Girl, Schitt's Creek, Parks and Rec, The Office. And then whichever one they pick, I send them a GIF of how excited I am that contacted me, because I want them to know that I'm listening and I want them to know that I'm connecting with them. And I'm not just another vendor and I'm not just another check off the list, that I want to be there and be more for them.
Those are such good icebreakers.
Yeah, that too. And then I can be like, oh, well, I think Parks and Rec is better. And here's why. And then we can get into a debate about that. And then by the time you know it, they've like signed the contract and they haven't even seen any of my photos, you know?
Right. What kind of form of marketing do you think has had the highest ROI for you? Is it print? Is it social? Is it, you know, phone calls or, you know, wedding venues?
I think my biggest source of marketing is word of mouth, which boils down to creating a fantastic client experience. So if I have one couple that I give them, you know, top to bottom, the best experience they could ask for, then they're going to tell at least three other people. And, you know, then if I service all three of those people, they're going to tell three more people each. It's just like a wave. If I give a client a bad experience, which is not going to happen, but mm-hmm. if it were to happen, you know, it's the same wave would happen, you know, the same wave would occur. So I think just remembering why you do what you do and who you do what you do for is the easiest way to bring in more clients.
Yeah. And I agree with you. When you get like a quote unquote bad review, it tends to be that you will tell other people about the bad experience. You'll tell 100 people when you have a great experience. It's like you're lucky if you tell one or two.
Exactly. You know?
And so those numbers are really important. But yeah, I like how you mentioned a little bit earlier that you want to make these photos valuable for the couples when they're looking at them 50 years from now, mm-hmm. you know, and I think going in with that approach really, really helps you connect with your clientele.
Well, my goal is to photograph how it felt, you know. Yes, you'll get pictures of what it looked like, but I really want to make sure that couples remember how they felt on their wedding day. You know, my parents got married in 87, and they have one album with all their photos in it. And if that album were to ever go missing or anything, we would lose it. But I remember looking at it when I was a kid, and it was all very, very, very different from how I photograph nowadays. You know, it was the 80s, so it was very posed and very perfect and very heavy on the flash. So, but I remember, you know, there are these little glimpses of moments where, you know, my mom is looking at her mom, and just the looks on their faces. I wasn't there, but it brings me back to those moments. And so those are the reasons why I photograph the way I do, so that my clients can have kids and grandkids if they so choose. And those grandkids can relive their grandparents' day.
As you're preparing for the big day or an elopement or an engagement shoot, what kind of tips do you provide the couples in advance that aren't usually in front of the camera?
Drink a lot of water and get a good night's sleep beforehand. Those are probably the two biggest things. Because when like a big wedding day comes, there are so many details to think about and focus on. And it drains a lot of energy. So aside from the physical, I think another big tip is, you know, remember why you're doing what you're doing, and it's for the other person at the end of the aisle. Mm-hmm. And it's for your future. So personally, I wanted to elope, just me and my fiance and the officiant and the photographer. But the reason that we're having a bigger wedding, knock on wood, for COVID, hopefully it's gone by 2021, but, sure. The reason that we're having a bigger wedding is for our family members, so that we can have all of our favorite people, friends and family included, in one spot. And we know that this is probably going to be the only time in our entire lives that all of those people will be there. So it's really, you know, it brings me back, like, focusing on that aspect of why I'm going through all the stress of wedding planning.
Right. Having just gotten married last year, I can kind of attest to that. You know, I mm-hmm. wanted the same thing. I wanted to just be like, Dina, myself, and that was it. Like, if we could get married without somebody marrying us, I would have done it. Mm-hmm. But you kind of find out that it's not really necessarily just about you two. It's about kind of like this whole family ensemble, all the friends, all the people that are coming that have helped you get where you are today. It's kind of a tribute to everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Digging back into, you know, your pre-day or pre-game preparations, do you tend to work by yourself, or do you have an assistant, a second shooter?
Yeah. So 9 times out of 10, I work by myself. It's just kind of what I'm used to. It really is up to the couple if they want to add a second photographer. It kind of depends on the wedding day. You know, if a couple is going to see each other before the ceremony, like a first look style, I don't think you really need a second photographer. But if you are not going to see each other before the ceremony, I do usually recommend it so that we can get both reactions as one of them walks down the aisle. When you see each other as husband and wife, or wife and wife, or husband and husband for the first time, it's a powerful moment. And so I always recommend it to couples, but it's never something that I feel unprepared for by not having.
Do you, let me see, do you approach it differently, or like, do you strategize when you have two people? Like, do you go over a game plan with them and like, work this angle, I'll be here? Like, how does that process change from compared to when you're just flying solo?
Yeah. So when I do have someone with me, I always make sure that they are never standing right next to me shooting the exact same thing that I am. That's probably my biggest mm-hmm. thing when it comes to hiring second photographers.
100%. Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, like, yes, the second photographers are usually newer. They usually want more photos in their portfolio so that they can sell weddings to other couples. I mean, I've been there. I know exactly what they're doing. But at the end of the day, our services are for the couple, not for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So if I do have a second with me, you know, I always make sure that they're in a different place. If they are right next to me, that they've got to be shooting a different kind of like lens, different angle, just something to diversify the portfolio at the end of the day for the couple.
I don't want to get too techie here, but what kind of gear do you go into the field with? Are you using like mirrorless cameras? Do you use a lot of natural light or heavy on the flash? What's your kit look like?
So I am a Nikon photographer. I've been a Nikon photographer for about 10 years now. And I don't think I'll ever switch. I still shoot DSLR. I have not transitioned into mirrorless. I'm not sure if I will, honestly. I've had a second photographer who had a mirrorless camera, and editing her photos, even though they were both Nikon, was insanely different than my DSLR photos. I don't know if it was the sensor, but the colors were just whack and it took forever. but I shoot Nikon. I tend to go mostly natural light until it comes to the reception. And that's when I'll put up a whole off-camera flash system. I use Pocket Wizard to trigger. I know that Godox is having a moment right now and is very, very popular. But mm-hmm. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
But usually I do more creative lighting in the reception. The ceremony, I like to kind of take the fly on the wall approach. So I usually don't use flash during the ceremony, even if it's indoors, because I want that moment to be focused on the couple.
So speaking of your approach, you mentioned fly on the wall during the reception, but how about during, you know, pre or during the ceremony? Are you doing a lot of directing or staging, or does it depend on each client?
For the most part, I keep the same photojournalistic approach to everything. Mm-hmm. You know, but I will take over in certain situations. So for example, you know, while like a bride and her bridesmaids are getting ready, I'm very photojournalistic, very hands off. But when it comes time to put her dress on, you know, I'll make sure that she's in this one corner of the room because it has the best light, and here's the way you should face, and mom, here's where you should step. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little bit more hands on, but then I let the moments happen naturally. I never want to coach every single aspect of the day, but it's more of a guided approach to let the moments flow freely.
Yeah, no, I definitely think the guiding approach of like, oh, if you just open up over here a little bit, or, and let me open up all these blinds so we get a flood of light is almost,
right.
Like, it, and that's why you're there, you know, like you're there for that expertise and knowing like, if you just take two steps to the left, everything will be so much better.
Right. Yeah. And it's so different from like traditional photojournalism where you are not supposed to be involved at all in the process. Mm-hmm. So that was a big shift. Learning how to be, you know, or I guess, you know, overcoming the guilt, the photojournalist guilt that I shouldn't be adjusting anything, but actually that's why they hired me. So right. Exactly like you said.
What was your biggest lesson learned in learning how to pose?
The same poses don't work for every single body.
Ooh, mm-hmm.
I mean,
is it just getting your reps in, like that you have to photograph just a ton of people to kind of figure that out?
Kinda, yeah. I mean, back in the early stages of when I was working for that other photographer, she and I would go to workshops that were more posing heavy, which I'm grateful to or for, because she, you know, helped me kind of get that aspect in early. So I understood that side of wedding photography much earlier than I think a lot of people do. But it truly just is all about practice. It's just like any skill. So, you know, knowing that this certain pose works on this kind of couple, but doesn't work for this kind of couple. I mean, traditionally, poses have been very heteronormative. And so, especially as I think about my business in the future, I want to be inclusive to all kinds of relationships. So it's not really fair for me to put a heteronormative pose on mm-hmm. like a same-sex couple or a non-binary couple. It just doesn't work. So right. I think that's been the biggest shift for me.
Kind of, you know, transitioning back to school a little bit, Mike and I always like to pick people's brains on, you know, like what were some of the positives about your time in college, and maybe what are one or two things that the program might have missed that you wish now as a freelancer, entrepreneur, you know, your photojournalism career or education might have covered?
So I am incredibly grateful to the Mizzou Photojournalism Program for teaching me how to light properly. You know, we spent one whole semester just in the studio and learning how to light on location and how to use like fill flash versus different kinds of lighting, how to see light better. I don't think I would be the same photographer that I am today without that class. Sadly, they have kind of absorbed that class into another one. So it's not as dedicated, focused, or it's not as focused on lighting for the whole semester, which is sad and unfortunate because I do think that that really differentiated me from a lot of people in whatever market I've ever been in. So I'm grateful that that class existed and I wish that they still taught it. I did have one class in college that was, called Business Practices, and it was just about how to be a freelancer. And I kind of wish I had taken that class more seriously. I think I, you know, paid attention. I learned, I knew a lot coming out of that class, but I still had it in my head that I would get a traditional job. And I just don't think I was ready for that not to be an option. Mm-hmm. I think at Mizzou especially, they really prided themselves on 97% of their graduates either getting jobs or going straight into grad school. But what about that other 3%, which was me? I didn't get a job straight out of college because we moved to a town that had a very small journalism presence. And by the time we had gotten there, it didn't really want a traditional job. It didn't really want a 9-to-5 after living the freelancer life. So I wish that I had been more prepared for that in general. I wish I had taken that one class a little bit more seriously, but it worked out. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I wish that class existed for me in general, you know.
Right.
Yeah, those are really important skills to learn. Kind of talking about your pricing one more time, mm-hmm. How has your pricing strategy evolved from the time that you first started right out of college and just freelancing just to get your feet wet to now? Has it changed at all?
Oh my gosh, yes. So the first wedding I ever photographed, I was 19 years old. It was 2013, and I charged $500 for 8 hours, which at the time I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. Yeah. And coming out of grad school, after I kind of really dove headfirst into freelancing, I was probably what you would consider mid-range. I think I was doing like $2,000 for all day with an engagement session.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that point, I had had about like 50 weddings under my belt. I kind of knew what I was doing. And nowadays, I'm, you know, closer to 100. That was in 2018. Yeah. Yeah. So 2018, I had about 50 weddings under my belt. Nowadays, I'm closer to 100 weddings under my belt. I can pretty much handle anything that a wedding day throws at me. And now I'm most of my clients spend around $4,000 for me. So, right. But it's not like I just decided that was my price. You know, that's based on my cost of doing business. You know, what does it take to feed my animals? What does it take to pay my rent and keep my lights on? What does it take to keep my gear up to date? And, you know, all of the Adobe programs that we can't live without.
Mm-hmm.
But then also considering, how has my client experience evolved over the years? And what am I doing now to deserve that price tag? So for example, you know, if you inquire with me, the first thing I'm going to suggest is that we get on a phone call to get to know each other, because it is a much more personal experience with a wedding photographer than really with most other vendors, aside from a few. You know, you don't hang out with your florist all day. They drop off the flowers and then they go. Then when I book clients, I send them a welcome gift. You know, they get a little magazine in the mail from me that I've hand designed that has about 75 pages of tips on how to prepare for your photos, but also how to plan your wedding in general, just in case you aren't hiring a wedding planner or you don't know what you're doing. I have half of my magazine is just how to plan a wedding.
Is this in a hard form? Like this is a hardcover kind of?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You get it in the mail. Usually I throw candy in there because I love candy. So, you know, I just kind of force that on all my clients. but you get that in the mail as soon as we are officially booked. I am a resource for my clients throughout the whole wedding planning process. You know, if they don't know if they want to do a first look or not, I mean, not only is it in the magazine on why you should or shouldn't, but I'm happy to have conversations with clients about, you know, what their priorities are, so that they can plan their timeline for their day, so they can maximize the number of photos that they're going to get from me. Within 24 hours of your wedding day, you have sneak peeks from me. Within 2 weeks, you have a whole blog post of about 100 images. It's usually closer to 150 because I can't control myself. and then I always contract that your wedding photos will be done within 6 to 8 weeks of your wedding day, but I usually deliver on a couple's 1 month anniversary. So, okay. And then there are gifts after the wedding. So, I mean, like I'll send out a thank you so much gift with, you know, little surprises in there. I usually do holiday gifts for all my couples with little ornaments that say like, it's our first Christmas married or something like that.
Wow. So you kind of keep a track of the holiday stuff as well. So you send them to your clients that, you know, just saying happy holidays.
Yeah. And, you know, just like, thanks for letting me be part of your story this year. I hope this these first few months of marriage have been spectacular, you know, just as another way to let them know that I do appreciate them, that they aren't just a paycheck for me.
That's awesome. Because
without my couples, I really couldn't do what I do.
Yeah.
And so they have to know how important they are to me.
That's fantastic marketing right there. a lot of stuff that I didn't think of. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, really quick. I just want to, how did this magazine idea come about? You know, because I think this is really innovative. I haven't really heard people doing this before.
Yeah, so there are other photographers who are a little bit more well-established who have actually created like InDesign templates of magazines, complete with all the content and everything for their couples, as kind of like a how to prep for your photos kind of resource. So I had seen a few of those. I basically wanted to create something that was a resource so they didn't so that my couples didn't have to text me all the time and ask me questions. So, you know, one of the biggest questions I get is like, what do I wear to my engagement session? And I can just say, oh, go over to your magazine that I sent you on pages X, Y, and Z. Here's a whole bunch of tips on how to coordinate outfits together, what to prepare for, you know, make sure you clean the ring before you show up to your session. Just little tiny details that just make their photos so much better. And then by the time that they arrive to the session, they're not stressing over how they look. They're not stressing over, am I posing right? Because I have all of this content that says, I'm going to put you in awkward poses, but it's only to get your laughing reactions out of it. And just deal with it and trust me. So,
how long did that take you to build that?
Oh my gosh, hours. Yeah. I first created it in 2018. I want to say it probably took me from like conception to publication, maybe about a month or two. Because I also had a lot of, I had my best friend look over it. I had a graphic designer look over it to make sure it was all printable and everything like that. But it's one of those things that has paid off so much because now all I have to do is every year just update the photos, make sure no copy is out of date or anything, and then just get more printed. So
I think that's such a great thing to do because this whole thing is about providing value, and you're providing so much value to a couple. I didn't get this. You know, I don't know, Robert, did you get this
when you got married?
Yeah. I mean, so that is really helpful. And I think when it kind of goes back to like your pricing evolution, I think the hardest person to negotiate with is yourself sometimes. You know, that it starts there. And just seeing all this value that you have provided, and it's going to come back to you in the form of, you know, referrals and what have you to kind of reinforce, oh yeah, I actually do need to up my rates now. I mean, it's clear.
And I mean, wedding photography is expensive. It always has been. And I think it always will be. Yeah. And it's just, you know, what are you doing to earn that paycheck? You know, I think that's the core question that you have to ask yourself is, are you worth what you think you're worth? Or is your ego getting in the way? That's something that I kind of battle with daily is, you know, am I worth what I'm charging? Am I providing enough value to my clients to be able to charge this?
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the editing style. How would you describe your editing process?
My editing style, I describe it as true to color with an edge of warmth. Is kind of the easiest, most concise way. I do edit in Lightroom. I do use presets because they're easier and faster, and that's how I can deliver photos so easily and quickly. But they're custom-made presets. So based on how I see light, based on the way that I want my final photos to look, but I don't want things to look unnatural, you know? So I know that for a while in the wedding industry, the trend was to have really orange skin tones and really dead looking grass. That's never been a thing for me. I've always hated it because I think greens should be greens and blues should be blues. And they can have, you know, that kind of sun glowy warmth to them that doesn't detract from what it actually looked like. And I think that a lot of that comes from the photojournalistic background. You know, I still want it to look realistic, but also right.
Do you tend to, you know, upload everything and then just kind of go through and tag and select your keepers? And then do you narrow it down that way? Or a little bit, what's your process on that?
Yeah, so I'll dump to an external hard drive, and then I use Photo Mechanic to cull. That's one of the photojournalism, you know, things that I could never get rid of because it was just too valuable.
Yeah, Photo Mechanic's a beast.
But I use Photo Mechanic to cull, and then I'll import all into Lightroom. In Lightroom, I usually select the 100 or so images that I'll use for the blog post, kind of as the teaser. And making sure that, you know, this is another marketing thing, making sure that your blog posts come before your gallery delivery when it comes to your clients, not only increases hype and excitement from your clients, but it also makes sure that you're staying on top of your blogging and your SEO efforts. So that was something that I quickly learned, that it's a lot easier to do it before the final gallery is delivered. And but then if I have those 100 or so images throughout the entire day's gallery, that are all edited to my standards, I can export my catalog and send it to someone to have them finish up the rest, to outsource my editing, because I know that they have reference points of images that I approve of, and then they just have to edit to match.
That's smart. Where do you stand on black and white?
I think black and white is, I think black and white should be used for certain moments and certain photos. I don't think every photo belongs in black and white. I think there are certain images where the color distracts from the moment, and those images I'll usually shift into black and white. I've rarely had any client ask for a photo that was in black and white to be shifted back into color, because it's part of the creative process and they understand that, you know, if this photo were in color, there would be all of these distracting elements in the background that would really take you away from the pretty moment.
Right. Your deliverables, how do your clients receive the images?
I deliver everything on an online gallery. I use Zenfolio for hosting because it's cheap and it doesn't expire and it's unlimited. So I'll deliver all of my images through a personalized gallery. It's usually password protected so that random strangers can't stumble onto their gallery and download all their photos. But since it doesn't expire and I pay for unlimited storage, there's no reason for me to ever take photos down. Because again, the goal is, you know, 10, 20 years, if they lose their files for whatever reason, I still want to have them. And even if I can have the same hosting gallery there, I can just resend the link.
Right. And kind of going back to what you were talking about with your SEO, do you keyword a lot of your images to kind of drive that back to your website?
So SEO is something that I'm still very new to. But yes, a lot of keywording within the images, the file names, and then within the blog post itself. So actually writing about 300 to 600 words that the keywords are sprinkled into is mostly what my SEO efforts have been. I know that to be successful, you need to have a lot of backlinks to your website, because then Google sees you as more important, quote unquote, which boosts your rankings.
Right.
So how has your writing process kind of come along? Because I know, like, I'm trying to get in more into writing, and I know you're partly doing it just for SEO, but has there been a learning curve on that process?
Yeah, because a lot of my old blogging, I actually just had someone go in and update all my old blogs so that they're a little bit more standardized and a little bit easier to navigate. But a lot of my old blogging was very fluffy, I guess. And lately nowadays, I'm trying to visually describe things a little bit more, while still keeping my keywords in mind. Another big thing is alt text on the photos. So for people who are visually impaired, that way they can know what the photo looks like, even if they can't see it. But that also helps with your SEO rankings. So,
once again, just looking over your blog posts, it seems very well put together and very well organized.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think SEO is something that a lot of photographers, we don't really think about, you know, because I tend to think, at least for myself, that it's like our work is what gets us found, or our work is who we are. And it's like, no, this is a business. This is a process. Like, you should be taking these things pretty seriously.
And that's the thing that I didn't really feel like I learned as strongly in my undergrad experience, was that you have to treat your photojournalism work as a business. You know, you can't just get lucky and hope that someone from the Washington Post will see your photo one day. Right. You have to work for it.
Yeah. It takes a lot of time, a lot of behind the scenes work, if not,
yes.
not just your photo.
Yeah.
Amber, do you do, I would imagine that you request deposits up front for your mm-hmm. work. Do you have like a strategy for aspiring photographers in terms of like a percentage? You should do this percentage for deposits based off of what your rates are.
So I've heard a lot of people do the percentage thing. Personally, I just do a flat fee to hold the date. Gotcha. I just require $1,000 to hold the date on my calendar, and that plus a signed digital contract, that will consider us booked, quote unquote. Gotcha. And then the rest isn't due until 30 days before the wedding. So for a lot of couples who are booking me a year out, you know, it's much more manageable than paying like 50% of their final package.
Gotcha. You know, okay. So you do 30 days before the wedding, the rest is due.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's just to make sure that, you know, yes, the wedding is still happening. Yes, we still want you there. and even though I know that it's vastly different for the journalism and commercial world, where photographers get paid either on the shoot date or after.
Yeah.
It's industry standard for weddings to do 30 days before to make sure that the event is still happening.
Gotcha. And what do you rely on, like add-on sales? Like you talked about a little bit, books, you know, do you build that in and kind of give those packages as well?
So I think every package is different because every wedding is different. So, you know, some couples really, really value having printed albums and canvases on their walls, and some couples, they just want to be able to like open up their phone and look at their photos, and that's fine. I mean, I can't force every couple to care about printed photos. I care about printed photos, but but that's because my understanding of them is significantly different than a lot of other people.
Right.
So if a client says it's important to them, I'll build it into their package and make sure that, you know, I'm not pushing their budget too far, but also that, you know, I'm being properly compensated for my time and designing efforts, because I hand design every album that I would create.
Did you think about, because there are a lot of horror stories about wedding photographers and their clients that happen to be, you know, less than fun to work with. Have you ever given much thought to incorporating your business? Are you already incorporated, or what are your just thoughts on business structures?
Yes. So I have been an LLC since 2016. Mm-hmm. And the reason I chose to be an LLC was because if for some reason, God forbid, I were not to deliver on my promises, as an LLC, my clients can only come after my LLC.
Right.
If I were any other kind of business, or God forbid, not incorporated at all, then they could take everything I had.
Mm-hmm.
So for pure protection's sake, I chose to go with LLC. I think it's usually a more expensive option, but having that extra level of insurance has been worth it.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's one of those long-term business decisions that you have to pay up front for, you know, because it is a little bit pricey.
Yeah. And in the state of Nevada, so every other state I've ever lived in, you pay a one-time fee to be incorporated with that state. In the state of Nevada, it's a yearly expense, and it's much more expensive because Nevada doesn't charge income tax, so for mm-hmm. the state, so we only pay federal income tax. So the way that the state makes their money is through small business ownership.
Interesting.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about you do another great option for photographers on your website, kind of this mentorship program. Walk me through that. What's that program like?
So I have two different options. One is a virtual option where, you know, we would get on a Zoom call and basically you pay by the hour and you can pick my brain to know about any of my business processes, about the way that I handle certain situations. You know, I've been doing weddings for 7 years. I've been a photographer for about 10 years. So I know a thing or two by now. and so I remember, you know, I was lucky to work under someone who taught me so much of how to run a business. But I know that not everyone has that luxury, or has been able to work for that luxury. So being able to offer that is, I think, the easiest way for people to start a side hobby and turn it into a business. And then the other option is an in-person shoot. So, you know, we'd meet up in my hometown, in Las Vegas. I would get a couple, we would go photograph them together. So I can help you posing. I can help you, you know, seeing light in different ways, you know, backlighting versus front lighting, and what to do in this situation. And what if it's raining, and what if it's not raining, and what if it's cloudy, you know, mm-hmm. that whole in-person experience. And then we sit down together and I show you my editing process as well. Wow. So it's a little bit more fine-tuned, than the virtual option, because it's purely focused on posing and editing.
That kind of reminds me of, you know, location. You've moved around a lot. Mm-hmm. How much scouting do you do just in terms of the local spots to see, okay, that would be great for a couple shoot. That'd be great for an elopement. That'd be great for this kind of whatever setting that you wanted to. Do you do that? Do you kind of like comb the area and just kind of see, okay, this is going to work?
Yeah. So usually within the first month or two of moving to a new place, I'll do a lot of driving.
Yeah.
Do a lot of location scouting, figure out what's popular in the area, where the people hang out, what other photographers in the area usually go to photograph their clients. And then I'll set up like a model call. So I'll ask for a couple to model for me for free. You know, they get free photos in exchange, but then I get the portfolio of the area. So I think it's very hard to sell places that you've never been to couples. So having those free photos in your portfolio, it's a much easier process to do that.
Yeah. What do you think, what's your favorite piece of advice that you ever got?
Oh no. you know, it was a phrase that the photographer that I worked for, that she and I used to say in different situations, but we would all, you know, if something was going wrong, you know, if it was raining on a wedding day, if, you know, the florist was running behind and we didn't have any flowers for the wedding party photos, or the hair and makeup artist was running behind and we had suddenly so much less time to get all the formal photos done, we just kind of looked at each other and we would tell each other, figure it the fuck out.
Yeah.
And there's really no other way to go about wedding days. You just have to figure it out and you just have to make it work. And so being flexible and being able to handle anything that a wedding day can throw at you, I think is the best experience. I don't know if I would really call it a piece of advice, but sure. The best learning experience is just hands-on figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and kind of to pick your brain on the opposite side of that, what's something that you've learned either from like a small setback or a failure, or, you know, you tried something and it totally didn't work? Because I feel like we learn a lot more from something that puts a pie on our face than all our successes.
Whenever you are taking a photo, no matter how like insignificant the photo seems, make sure you're writing to both cards in your camera at the exact same time. So I had an engagement session where we had multiple locations happening and I was only writing to one card. Even though my camera could handle two cards, I got confused while I was switching memory cards because one had filled up and I accidentally formatted all over the photos that I had just shot. So thankfully, and then I shot over it. So it was impossible for me to recover. But thankfully it was just an engagement session. It wasn't a wedding. It wasn't an elopement, but never again, you know? Yeah. So now I only have cameras that have dual card slots. They write at the same time to both cards. I get home and I back them up to multiple different places. And then I don't format the card until the final gallery is delivered. It's that was a mess, but it's fine.
Amber, you have a lot of experience just being on site at weddings, obviously. I would imagine that every once in a while it gets kind of old hat, but, you know, what's the best thing about photographing weddings? And then what's the worst thing?
Okay, I'll start with the worst thing. The worst thing, well, okay, it's not the worst, but the least enjoyable part for me is honestly the formal family photos.
I can't believe I forgot to ask you about formals. I hate formals. Yeah, those are tough.
So for me, like with my background in photojournalism, I love the moments. I love the action. Mm-hmm. And I know deep in my heart that the formal family photos are what moms, dads, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, that's what they're really looking forward to. So I treat it with the most care possible. And it's not something that I just, oh, you know, it's another check off the list. You know, it's a very important part of the wedding day. But man, I know couples who they just get tired of just standing in one spot staring at me the entire time. Mm-hmm. And then I got to tell them to shake it out because their smile's getting all crunchy. You know, I'm like, you gotta move around a little bit and give me a new smile or I'll tell bad jokes for you. But I usually try to get through that process pretty quickly while still making sure I do the best work possible because there's so many other things that need to happen during the day. And I know that those are the moments where everyone is waiting on me and only me. So
right.
It's got to go quickly.
And the best thing?
Yeah, my favorite part of wedding days, as cheesy as it sounds, the ceremony. So, you know, a lot of my couples, they have been together for years and years and years. And this is the moment where they get to stand in front of their favorite people and commit to each other in such a whole and complete manner. I've photographed nearly 100 weddings and I have cried during every single one.
Wow.
And it's 9 times out of 10 during the ceremony or it's during the first dance. But those intimate moments where, you know, you are making that life decision to be with this other person and to share yourself so completely is just magical to me. So yeah. That's my favorite part.
That's amazing.
I've learned how to shoot through tears. So
yeah. Yeah. It's an emotional time.
Yeah.
I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
What do you want aspiring wedding photographers to take away from this conversation? If you have one piece of counsel, what would it be?
Oh, if you think you're doing enough, you're probably not. And take that to mean whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can always be doing more marketing. You can always be doing more sales and you can always be doing more for your clients. But put your clients first and go above and beyond because that's what's going to make you stand out. And that's what's going to make people say, you know, this was a really great investment. She was a really great choice or he was a really good choice or they were a really great choice. And I mean, you know, hearkening back to how I send gifts to my clients throughout the year, all the way through the holidays, the number of times I get, you know, tagged in an Instagram post or a Facebook post, that's just, you know, one more notch on my marketing, where more people are seeing me. So just be extra, do the most, because it's going to be worth it.
No, I think that's great advice. And Amber, I just want to say thank you for joining us on this episode. Where can people find you online?
Oh, my website is www.ambergarrettphoto.com. And then on Instagram, I'm at @AmberGarrettPhoto.
Amber, this was outstanding. I appreciate you. Congratulations on your engagement. I hope everything goes smoothly there.
Thank you.
This was wonderful. I think this is really inspiring for anybody. This is a great area for people to get into if they love weddings and you know, who doesn't need a little bit more love in the world that we live in right now. So this has just been fantastic. And I just want to wrap that up with, you know, a line that you mentioned, which I think is so eloquently put, which is figure it the fuck out. And I love that. Robert, do you have anything else to say?
No, I just want to say thank you. This has been a great, great episode. I'm definitely going to steal some of your tips and tricks, you know, moving forward. So anytime you want to come back on the show, just let us know. We would love to have you. I just want to say thanks again.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And then one last little plug, just, you know, in case we forget, anybody that is a photographer, go check out that mentorship area that Amber has. I think that's a fantastic value to learn a lot when you don't have an actual mentor in your corner.
All right. That looks like it's going to be it for us today. Once again, if you've enjoyed this podcast, give us a like on Apple Review or Spotify. Don't forget to find us on @media1099 podcast on Instagram. And don't forget to check out our website with blog posts and updates, media1099.com. I'm Robert Husky here with Michael Durr, and we will catch you on the next episode.